We often hear it said of some man that he just can't get himself together. What this means is that he is psychologically fragmented. Various parts of his personality are split off from each other. A man who cannot get it together is a man who has probably not had the opportunity to undergo ritual initiation into the deep structures of manhood. He remains a boy, not because he wants to, but because no one has shown him the way to transform his boy energies into man energies. No one has led him into direct and healing experiences of the inner world of the masculine potentials. It can be said that life's perhaps most fundamental dynamic is the attempt to move from a lower form of experience and consciousness to a higher or deeper level of consciousness, from a diffuse identity to a more consolidated and structured identity. All of human life at least attempts to move forward along these lines. We seek initiation into adulthood, into adult responsibilities and duties toward ourselves and others, into adult joys and adult rights, and into adult spirituality. Tribal societies had highly specific notions about adulthood, both masculine and feminine, and how to get to it. And they had ritual processes to enable their children to achieve what we would call calm, secure maturity. Our own culture has pseudo-rituals instead. There are many pseudo-initiations for men in our culture. Conscription into the military is one. The gangs of our major cities are another manifestation of pseudo-initiation. And so are the prison systems, which, in large measure, are run by gangs. We call these phenomena pseudo-events for two reasons. For one thing, with the possible exception of military initiation, these processes, though sometimes highly ritualized, more often than not, initiate the boy into a kind of masculinity that is skewed, stunted, and false. It is a patriarchal manhood, one that is abusive of others and often of oneself. These pseudo-initiations will not produce men, because real men are not wantonly violent or hostile. Boy psychology is charged with the struggle for dominance of others in some form or another, and it is often caught up in the wounding of self as well as of others. It is sadomasochistic. Man psychology is always the opposite. It is nurturing and generative, not wounding and destructive. In order for man psychology to come into being for any particular man, there needs to be a death. Death, symbolic, psychological, or spiritual, is always a vital part of any initiatory ritual. In psychological terms, the boy ego must die. The old ways of being and doing and thinking and feeling must ritually die before the new man can emerge. Pseudo-initiation often amplifies the ego's striving for power and control in a new form, an adolescent form regulated by other adolescents. Effective, transformative initiation slays the ego and its desires in its old form to resurrect it with a new subordinate relationship to a previously unknown power or center. Submission to the power of the mature masculine energies always brings forth a new masculine personality that is marked by calm, compassion, clarity of vision, and generativity. A second factor makes most initiations in our culture pseudo-initiations. In most cases, there is simply not a contained ritual process. Ritual process is contained by two things. The first is sacred space. In tribal societies, this space can be a specifically constructed hut or house in which the boys awaiting their initiation are held. It can be a cave, or it can be the vast wilderness into which the would-be initiate is driven in order to die or to find his manhood. The second essential ingredient for a successful initiatory process is the presence of a ritual elder. The ritual elder is the man who knows the secret wisdom, who knows the ways of the tribe and the closely guarded men's myths. He is the one who lives out of a vision of mature masculinity. With a scarcity in our culture of mature men, it goes without saying that ritual elders are in desperately short supply. Thus, pseudo-initiations remain skewed toward the reinforcement of boy psychology. The crisis in mature masculinity is very much upon us. Lacking adequate models of mature men, and lacking the societal cohesion and institutional structures for actualizing ritual process, it's every man for himself. And most of us fall by the wayside with no idea what went wrong in our strivings. We just know we are anxious, on the verge of feeling impotent, helpless, frustrated, put down, unloved and unappreciated, often ashamed of being masculine. Many of us seek the generative, affirming, and empowering father, though most of us don't know it, the father who, for most of us, never existed in our lives and won't appear, no matter how hard we try to make him appear. However, as students of human mythology and as Jungians, we believe there is good news. It's this good news for men, as well as for women, that we want to share. Those of us who've been influenced by the thinking of the great Swiss psychologist Carl Jung have great reason to hope that the external deficiencies we have encountered in the world as would-be men, for instance, the absent father. The scarcity of ritual elders can be corrected. And we have not only hope, but experience as clinicians and as individuals of inner resources not imagined by psychology before Jung. It is our experience that deep within every man are blueprints, what we can also call the hard wiring for the calm and positive, mature masculine. Jungians refer to these masculine potentials as archetypes. Jung and his successors have found that on the level of the deep unconscious, the psyche of every person is grounded in what Jung called the collective unconscious, made up of instinctual patterns and energy configurations probably inherited genetically throughout the generations of our species. These archetypes provide the very foundations of our behaviors, our thinking, our feeling, and our characteristic human reactions. They are the image makers that artists and poets and religious prophets are so close to. Jung related them directly to the instincts in other animals. The existence of the archetypes is well documented by mountains of clinical evidence from the dreams and daydreams of patients and from careful observation of entrenched patterns of human behavior. It is also documented by in-depth studies of mythology the world over. Again and again, we see the same essential figures appearing in folklore and mythology, and these just happen to appear also in the dreams of people who have no knowledge of these fields. The dying, resurrecting young god, for example, is found in the myths of such diverse peoples as Christians, Muslim Persians, ancient Sumerians, and modern Native Americans, as well as in the dreams of those undergoing psychotherapy. The evidence is great that there are underlying patterns that determine human cognitive and emotional life. These blueprints appear to be great in number, and they manifest themselves as both male and female. There are archetypes that pattern the thoughts and feelings and relationships of women, and there are archetypes that pattern the thoughts and feelings and relationships of men. In addition, Jungians have found that in every man there is a feminine sub-personality called the anima, made up of the feminine archetypes. And in every woman, there is a masculine subpersonality called the animus, made up of the masculine archetypes. All human beings can access the archetypes to a greater or lesser degree. We do this, in fact, in our interrelating with one another. This whole field is being actively discussed and continually revised as our knowledge about the inner instinctual human world moves forward. We are just beginning to sort out in a systematic way the inner human world that has always manifested itself to us in myth, ritual, dreams, and visions. The field of archetypal psychology is in its infancy. We want to show men how they can access these positive archetypal potentials for their own benefit and for the benefit of all those around them, maybe even for the planet. The drug dealer, the ducking and diving political leader, the wife beater, the chronically crabby boss, the hotshot junior executive, the unfaithful husband, the company yes man, the indifferent graduate school advisor, the holier-than-thou minister, the gang member, the father who can never find the time to attend his daughter's school programs, the coach who ridicules his star athletes, the therapist who unconsciously attacks his client's shining and seeks a kind of gray normalcy for them, the yuppie. All these men have something in common. They are all boys pretending to be men. They got that way honestly because nobody showed them what a mature man is like. Their kind of manhood is a pretense to manhood that goes largely undetected as such by most of us. We are continually mistaking this man's controlling, threatening, and hostile behaviors for strength. In reality, he is showing an underlying extreme vulnerability and weakness, the vulnerability of a wounded boy. The devastating fact is that most men are fixated at an immature level of development. These early developmental levels are governed by the inner blueprints appropriate to boyhood. When they are allowed to rule what should be adulthood, when the archetypes of boyhood are not built upon and transcended by the ego's appropriate accessing of the archetypes of mature masculinity, they cause us to act out of a boyishness that is hidden to us, but seldom to others. We often talk with affection about boyishness in our culture. The truth is that the boy in each of us, when he is in his appropriate place in our lives, is the source of playfulness, of pleasure, of fun, of energy, of a kind of open-mindedness that is ready for adventure and for the future. But there is another kind of boyishness that remains infantile in our interactions within ourselves and with others when manhood is required. Each of the archetypal energy potentials in the male psyche, in both its immature and its mature forms, has a three-part structure. At the top of the triangle is the archetype in its fullness. At the bottom of the triangle, the archetype is experienced in what we call a bipolar dysfunctional or shadow form. In both its immature and mature forms, that is, in both boy psychology and in man psychology terms, this bipolar dysfunction can be thought of as immature, in that it represents a psychological condition that is not integrated or cohesive. Lack of cohesion in the psyche is always a symptom of inadequate development, as the personality of the boy and then the man matures into its appropriate stage of development, the poles of these shadow forms become integrated and unified. Some boys seem more mature than others. They are accessing, no doubt unconsciously, the archetypes of boyhood more fully than are their peers. These boys have achieved a level of integration and inner unity that others have not. Other boys may seem more immature, even taking into account the natural immaturity of boyhood. For example, It is right for a boy to feel the heroic within himself, to see himself as a hero. But many boys cannot do this and become caught in the bipolar shadow forms of the hero, the grandstander bully, or the coward. Different archetypes come online at different developmental stages. The first archetype of the immature masculine to power up is the divine child. The precocious child and the Oedipal child are next, and the last stage of boyhood is governed by the hero. Human development does not always proceed so neatly, of course. There are mixtures of the archetypal influences all along the way. Interestingly, each of the archetypes of boy psychology gives rise in a complex way to each of the archetypes of mature masculinity. The boy is father to the man. Thus, the divine child, modulated and enriched by life's experiences, becomes the king. The precocious child becomes the magician. The Oedipal child becomes the lover, and the hero becomes the warrior. The four archetypes of boyhood, each with a triangular structure, can be put together to form a pyramid that depicts the structure of the boy's emerging identity, his immature masculine self. The same is true of the structure of the mature masculine self. As we have suggested, the adult man does not lose his boyishness, and the archetypes that form boyhood's foundation do not go away. Since archetypes cannot disappear, the mature man transcends the masculine powers of boyhood, building upon them rather than demolishing them. The resulting structure of the mature masculine self, therefore, is a pyramid over a pyramid. Though images should not be taken too literally, we are arguing that pyramids are universal symbols of the human self.